And the other part about all the different parts of our businesses that we do is with residential design and doing floral design and doing event design and doing holiday design, that gives us the opportunity to go into homes over and over again. And it's another way to really spread the word about, because we go in, it's just a dinner for 14 people. And I'm orchestrating the menu. I'm doing the wine pairing. I'm setting up the house. I'm making the flowers for the tables. I'm doing everything. So when they come in, they say, oh my gosh, who did all this? Oh, Christopher does it all. And then I'm at the event. Then they get to meet me. It's the most beautiful plan. It's a godsend. I don't know how I put it together, but it just works so beautifully for me. That's how it all goes together, and we make it all work, because truly all of the things are in a way linked together in some form or fashion.
Hey, y'all, you're listening to the Designer Within podcast, episode number 44. I'm John McClain, and welcome to the Designer Within podcast, the business-minded podcast created for creative entrepreneurs by a creative entrepreneur. That's me. I know firsthand the challenges, but also the victories that can come with our careers. And I'm here to sip and spill the tea with you. It's time to dive deep within yourself and redesign your own business and your life from the inside out. Together, we will uncover secrets and share valuable insights. So prepare for a transformative experience, my friends, because it's time to unleash the designer within. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Designer Within. We are on episode 44. So fun, right? We're inching slowly, almost there, to our 1 year anniversary of the podcast. If you're like me, you're just coming back from High Point and exhausted, but also exhilarated. If you were there, I hope you had a great time like I did. Lots of panels, lots of fun. Love seeing all of you there. And if you were there, you might have seen this next guy that I'm going to have on the podcast today, Christopher Todd. He is a fabulous designer based out of Las Vegas, but travels all over the country to do design projects. But what I think you're going to love about Christopher is not only is it his personality, his down-to-earth way of communicating, and of course his design chops, but also the way that he has multiple revenue streams within his company. It is so interesting to me. His story is fascinating. The way that he began his career, the way that he actually did break into doing flowers for the Academy Awards, yes, those Academy Awards, before he even began working in the industry. I think you're going to find his story exhilarating, inspiring, and also uplifting for yourselves. Christopher Todd began decorating homes at the age of 16. He is an Arkansas native, and he specializes in different genres of design that not only include interior design, but event design, including legendary events like the Academy Awards, as I said, and luxury auto launches, as well as exquisite floral and holiday decor, where he has designed and decorated celebrity homes, luxury hotels, and retail spaces throughout the U.S. Christopher's award-winning design portfolio offers 30 years of impeccable experience in the industry, knowledge and skills, and a discerning eye for detail. So sit back and relax and enjoy this fabulous interview with my friend and the wonderful designer, Christopher Todd Hall. Christopher, I am so happy to have you here. I feel like we had to stop ourselves, by the way, for everybody watching and listening, because Christopher and I can probably go on and on for hours of talking. So we had to stop ourselves before we said too many juicy bits before I hit the record button. Yeah, you and I can chit chat. Like my mama says, we can talk the horns off a brass billy goat. So we were doing that. Your history and your past is so varied and so interesting to me. But aside from my general bio that I gave, how in the heck did you get into interior design? What was the spark? What was the thing for this little Arkansas boy who decided that interior design was something that lights him up?
Well, I really started doing it when I was a kid. To a degree, I started with Christmas, which is still a big part of my company now. But I started with Christmas doing it in my hometown. My hometown is about 8,000 people and very small. And I just started doing that for people. I'm sure it was incredibly horrible looking back on what I started with. But that was the beginnings of it. And from there, I just created a flair and a knack for what I was good at. And I branched off. My first part of design was actually in the floral business. And I got my feet wet with that. And then, gosh, I did so many different things. I I lived in Dallas first, and I worked at the Dallas market, and I used to set up Snow Village, and everything just built on from these experiences. And what really started the spark of design is when I was living in Dallas, I started to work with this company that they specialized in window treatments. And so I started to learn a lot about window coverings in general. And I approached them one day. All they did was window treatments. And I said, well, you already sell fabric. Why don't you do bedding and things like that? And why don't we work in upholstery and those kind of things? And so I was 21 at this time. They were like, well, we've never thought of that. And we started doing that. And so that was my first dipping my toe into the waters of design with working with them. And from there, it just grew and grew and grew. My knowledge grew. We just kept going.
Design is one thing, but that's also like an entrepreneurial situation that you just stated there too. Like that was like, oh yeah, I love window treatments, but by the way, why don't you do this? So that's another avenue.
That's always, right?
So did you always have... Yeah.
That's always been me.
Did you always have that?
I remember when I was in the eighth grade, I remember I was going to help out a local flower shop in my hometown with Valentine's Day. And so I just decided to take a list on my own. I made a list up and I walked through at lunch time or whatever in the eighth grade. I'm like, did you need to send flowers to anybody? Because I can take your order right. The credit card didn't exist, especially for an eighth grader. I was like, if you want a bud vase, they're $12. If you want balloons or this. And I go back to this woman that owns this flower shop. And I'm like, I took all these orders today. I brought in like $500 from eighth graders. And she was blown away. So I've just always thought, okay, how can we maximize the profit and potential here? So
not even a lot of designers today are thinking about that. So I think that... Amazing that an eighth grader thought about that. That's fantastic. Were your parents or your mom or grandmother or anybody else artistic or design related? Did they like to do things like that too?
Well, my grandmother was very crafty. I'll say that. She was very good at things. But my mother used to joke and say, I don't know. She calls me Todd. Called me Todd. She says, I don't know where Todd gets it from. I can't stick a weed in a jar. Where that came from. She was the classic Southern debutante, poised, perfectly put together. So that was her saying. So I don't really know where my abilities came from, but I think probably the strongest gene would be my grandmother, my paternal grandmother. She was always doing crafty things and projects and things like that.
Well, I think it's partially the gay gene too. We have that gay gene inside of us that helps us out.
Do you remember the... It was like Tupperware, but it was called Home Interior Parties.
Yes, my mother sold it. Yes.
Those brass butterflies and all that. I mean, it was so incredibly horrible. But my grandmother, oh my gosh, she could have built a bronze statue if she had melted down all that crap all over the wall that she had collected from Home Interiors. It was everywhere, but she loved it. So that's dating us, John, when we talk about that stuff. It was Home Interior
Parties. But that's all I knew. That was a little boy who dreamt of doing design. That was my like, oh my God, this is amazing. Those boxes would come in, Christopher, and I would literally dive in. Yeah. I would dive in and it was everybody else's stuff that my mom had sold to people. And I would dive in. I would start playing with all their little trinkets and things. And I would hang all their stuff on our wall before she could even give it to the people who paid for it. Right. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's so funny.
But also, too, I think when you grow up in a small town like we did, you have visions of what your life can be and visions of where you want to take your life and also visions of what success looks like. Right. And what good design looks like. Did this sort of idea of what beautiful design is change from what it was when you were in your small town? How has it evolved over the years? Like, what was it when you were in that town where you're like, oh my gosh, this is how I see a room turning out? Because for me, for instance, it was all glitz and glamour and brights and shinies, which it still is a little bit, but how it's evolved to a bit more. But how has yours changed? Did you have a vision in your head as a young kid, and how much of that is still a part of who you are now as a designer?
It's definitely evolved, and definitely I would say it's more refined for sure. But I think
no home interiors.
I don't do any brass butterflies too much. But in my hometown, there was this store, and it was called Town and Country. And the owners of Town and Country, they brought in, and I'm not exaggerating, they brought in Fabergé eggs. They brought in beautiful, they had Waterford Crystal. They had all these Great City Traders, all these companies that were way far above what your town had ever seen or anything. And I went in there. I went in that store all the time. I actually wound up owning that store. It was my first business that I ever owned, and I bought it when I was 23. And that was my first business endeavor. But growing up, I was just mesmerized by this place and had all this stuff. So I really take that as a lot of my first training. I found out about companies, and I remember they used to sell Paragon art. And I remember thinking it was the most stunning stuff I'd ever seen in my life. And which it is still beautiful. I love a lot of it, although I'm partial to it originally. But I remember that company in particular. But I think about all the companies that was so much of an education for me. So early in my life, it was before I was, when I was in high school, I would go in and I'd find out all these companies. And these companies still exist today. And I can say, too, I was at an arts conference a couple of years ago, and I was talking to one of the owners with Paragon, and I said, oh, I used to buy your stuff 35 years ago. And he was like, wow, that's incredible. And he knew the people that owned the store. So back to your question, I feel like that was a big training. And then there was also one person who lived in my hometown. She's actually been texting me today about a project she's helping me on. And she just had a wonderful eye for design. Her name is Luann Dennison, and I've loved her for years. And I just learned so much from her because she had such a great mind. So I think if you look at things like, look at people that were influential in your life, I still take things away. Like I said, I was just texting her earlier today. Those things never leave you. And you have to make them your own and have to make things your own style. But I think that when those things are embedded in your brain, it just becomes part of who you are. And I've definitely explored more with my design. I remember my old Wi-Fi password used to be the cave because I liked dark, sultry. That was my look. I liked everything just dark, dark, dark. And as you can see now, I'm sitting in my living room and everything's white and colorful and bright. And so I kind of change. I go with the flow of what I'm feeling. And new experiences create new ideas for my brain.
Yeah, I totally feel that. I agree with you too. You said exactly how I feel. But those little seeds, I think, that are planted in our past and those things that were a part of our history and little things that we picked up along the way, they're always embedded in us in some form or fashion. And I find that they show their face at little parts in my design process sometimes. Like, oh, yeah, that's something I remember from 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 30 years ago, or whatever, right? It's just so interesting how our past creeps up into our current situations in life, right? No matter what it is. I think that's just an interesting part of life.
Yes. And also with that, I think that that creates the opportunity to be, I hate it when people say, oh, I can do all kinds of design because everybody has their look. Everybody has their thing. But I think when you are open to keeping those ideas and playing around with those, that's how you can create different looks for different people because you evolve with your own style, but you still have these tidbits in your brain of what used to be, and you can bring those out. When this house that I'm working on in Nashville, it's very European. I'll say that. That is not really my thing so much, but I'm throwing it down because I have part of that in me.
I want to jump back to evolving and the entrepreneurial side of things and what you've done. So you have, I don't know how it's happened, but you have this interesting way of flying under the radar, yet also being known by almost everybody. You're very interesting to me. Like, you're not this, and I mean this in the best way. You don't have this braggadocious way of talking about your business or your life or your designs, but yet you're extremely talented. You're very well spoken. You have beautiful designs. Your store's great. Your events are great, which we're going to talk about, but yet you're not out there as much as some people are, right? So how do you feel you have crafted your marketing over the years to be yourself and not be this person who has to be on social media all the time and doing this and doing that? You just do it so effortlessly. And you do it so honestly, and I can tell it comes from a very honest place from you. So what do you think your key is to doing your own marketing from your point of view versus copying what everybody else is doing?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
What if you could finally create the interior design business of your dreams while consistently bringing in six figures and doing it all with no stress? I am thrilled to introduce you to my brand new program for new and aspiring designers, the Design Business Fast Track. I know you have the design talents, but you just need help with the business side of design. And that's where I come in. You see other people in our industry living their dream every single day, and you might be a little bit frustrated that that's not your reality just yet. Just like you, I was there too. I started from zero, literally zero, and I worked my way up to six figures and then eventually to a multi-seven-figure business. And now I want to share my entire proven process with you. I want to help you choose the type of projects you love, flip the switch on repeatable processes in your company, and make six figures over and over again. At the end of the day, I know all you really want is to be a successful and profitable design business owner that lets you be, well, a designer. And in the Design Business Fast Track, I cover everything from finding your dream clients, project management, to branding and marketing, and so much more. You are going to gain the knowledge and confidence that you need to conquer every aspect of the design business without making costly and time-sucking mistakes. Are you ready to fast-track your design business? Visit designbusinessfasttrack.com and unleash your full creative and business potential. Let's make your design dreams a reality. Enroll today and let's do this together. I'll see you at designbusinessfasttrack.com. Doors are open today.
I want to go back to my parents for just a moment to start that, because I have so much, I have so many of their qualities of each of them, and they both passed. But my mother, as I said earlier, she was very poised. She had everything together. She was always, I'll say it like this, she went to the beauty shop, as she called it, every morning to have her hair done. She was just put together and she did everything right. And I really, really learned from that. Now, my dad, he was a school administrator. So he had to always be in charge of things. And he was also, although very, very well put together and very smart, he was also one of those, I'm not impressed by you. I don't care if you're a member of the country club. I don't care who your parents are. And I really don't care what you think about me. And I mean that in a, he didn't do things to be offensive by any means. He was wonderful, but I'm very much like that. If you don't like me, okay, I'm okay with that. So I feel like combining those two personalities into who I am, I think that's really what people get. I am very much, you get what with me. I don't try to pretend. I feel like my work speaks for itself and what I do. I've been through the ringer with my business. I've had ups, I've had downs. I've had lawsuits and everything. I'm not trying to cover any of that up, because it's made me understand how to do things. And what my secret sauce really is, I do things right and I do them right every time. And if I can't do them right, I take full responsibility for that. And I say, you know what? We messed it up. And instead of trying to find a scapegoat and say, oh, well, if the contractor done it, no, it's, I recommended the contractor. It's on me. So I feel like all those things create this genuine personality that it truly is who I am. And I feel like that is reflected well to my clients, and it creates a trust, and it creates not only a trust with personality, but also with financial, the financial part of it. I feel like people know that I'm legit and I'm not trying to go out and spend their money on something to a new outfit. Not going to do that. So I don't know. I just feel like all those things together, they've really created who I am. And that's who I want to be. And I'm proud and exceptionally happy for everybody that has the initiative to do all the social media stuff and do all the things that put their name out there. I've just chosen a different path to do it.
Well, it's worked, and it's worked really well for you. And I think that it's a lesson learned for everybody, that you don't always have to follow what the quote gurus are showing you and teaching you and telling you to do, that you can truly forge your own path and create your own version of how you want to succeed. Were you always this way? Were you always this straightforward person when you were a young designer? Because I'm thinking back to when I was young and I was starting out, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. You always still try to hold true, of course, to yourself, but you do tend to listen to outside voices. So if someone's new and listening, do you have any advice to them of like thinking back to young Christopher when he was just starting out, of how you would relay these things to someone who was new? Would you tell them to do the same thing now? Like, just be yourself?
I would tell everybody to just be themselves if they can. My biggest advice and things that I've learned, I really just said it, but I'll reiterate it. The biggest problem I've had is when you try to cover up a mistake. It never works out. And I think if you can just know what to say other than you just have to eat it sometimes and be like, screw it up. And so I think that's really hard for a lot of people to do that. And that's the best advice I can give you, is when you can do that and you can be open and honest with your clients, with your friends, with your employers, with your employees, with everybody, and just say, you know what, I did this, instead of trying to find a scapegoat. That's the best advice I can give you to anybody. It's just honesty is the best policy on things. And it builds character and it builds a withstanding relationship with people because they know they can trust you. I have clients that open up bank accounts and put my name on it for our projects so that they don't have to worry with me asking them for checks. It's just, that's the kind of trust levels that I've gained with my clients because of that. And I think it's the best philosophy and policy you can have.
Yeah, that speaks volumes right there. And when you own up to something, back to your other point, you might have felt like you lost in that moment. But at the end of the day, you're actually winning in the long term, because that trust and that success that you're going to have for that client trusting you more, and then for them telling other people, oh yeah, I trust this person so much because here's what they did. They owned up to this mistake. So I think that's so valuable. You and I have other stuff in common too. You actually have a retail store. I used to have a retail store. Retail stores have their own set of issues and their own set of fun little ups and downs and roller coaster rides and things like that that go along with owning a retail store. Just the public in general is a fun conversation to have, right? But tell me about what went into your thought process of having a retail store. You have one in Las Vegas, and there's some other plans for some new things that are happening. But first of all, tell me why you wanted to have a retail store, because I know some people listening might be thinking, oh, it's a great idea, I've thought about doing that. Maybe some of the reasons that you had are aligning with what they're thinking as well. But what's your thought process when you said, oh yes, I want to have a retail store? Here was the reasons why that happened for you.
Funny that you asked that in this order, because it goes bring it back to what I was just talking about. And I'm going to bring all that together here in one second. I was doing this design job back in 2015. And the client, they have piles of money. And we were doing this job. And they would, my part of the job was really just the design and the decor. And they were doing a lot of things that were like, they were contractor work. They were changing out a lot of things that a contractor was involved. But I had absolutely nothing to do with that. And they would leave town and go to their place in Florida for 2 weeks. And they would come back and they would complain to me about things that the contractor was not doing. And honestly, I had nothing to do with that. So in my personality we were just talking about, I simply said, well, you didn't pay me to be your contractor. And so if you'd like for me to be your contractor, I can do that. But that's not what I signed up for. And so I'm paraphrasing here. So I'm not going to take the blame. Well, that made the wife of the home very angry that I spoke to her in that manner. And I did not care.
The truth.
And I did not care that made her mad. Well, what happened is at that point, we were great friends. They switched on me like that. They were like, we don't want any of this stuff. And the way I do it, I'm very weird with how I do things. I don't really show my client a lot of accessories and stuff that I use because I feel like that limits me too much. I just go in and I'll be like, okay, we're going to put a budget number in here for decor and accessories, and then I'll show up. If you don't like something, you don't have to keep it. No big deal. And every single thing that they had not signed up on or signed up for, they would not take. And this was almost an 8,000 square foot house. And I had a 10 by 20 storage room packed full of really nice home decor and accessories with nothing to do with it. So that was the birthplace of my store. So I went to market and I supplemented what I already had with candles and things like that. And I found the space and I signed the lease and I opened a store. And now that was my third store that I've owned over the years. So I knew what it took to run a store and I was familiar with all that was involved with it. But it wasn't like I just said, you know what, I feel like I'm going to open a store. I did it a little bit out of necessity. I also thought that this will be a really good avenue to take to get my name out in Las Vegas, because I had not really done a lot of design work here. I was still traveling. The house I was just talking about was actually in Northwest Arkansas. So I was still doing a lot of my travel and a lot of my design out of state. So that really gave me the opportunity to build a name for myself here in Las Vegas. And it worked beautifully. It's been very successful with doing that. I've met some of my greatest friends now. My very best friend just wandered in one day into my store and we met, and that was 2 years ago. And he's one of the top realtors in Las Vegas and has referred tons of business to me. And that's just one example. We've had a huge success with the store here over the years. It's been 8 years. In 4 days, it will have been 8 years since I opened the store.
Wow. Some people just like the idea of having a retail store. You did it out of necessity because you had a retail store sitting in a warehouse, the storage unit, and then you did it. But, you know, I do like the idea. I did it, as you were saying, as a calling card. I did it because, oh, yeah, people can come in and see your design aesthetic and understand that part of it, which I think is why a lot of people, designers, I should say, a lot of designers open a retail store, is because it does give people a chance to see your design aesthetic, chat with the designer, get an idea for your personality. So you're saying in those aspects for you, that part was a success.
Yeah, for sure. It was a great success. It was a great success. The biggest misconception, or the thing that I think people don't think about in opening a store, and I'm sure you know this quite well, is when you have just a standard keystone markup, if you buy 12 and you've got to sell 6 to make your money back, but then you need to restock. So then you have to spend the money that you've made to restock. And so it's just a never, unless you've got such deep pockets or you need a tax write-off or something like that. And I know that a lot of designers don't have that luxury to do that. So it's definitely a constant catch up, and it's, you can never get ahead unless you really have some means of doing that. And it's tough. It's tough. And you look at your store and you're like, God, if I had all this money right now, it'd be fantastic. I'm sure you understand where I'm coming from. It's just,
I do totally. And also it's its own business. Like, it's its own entity. It's its own business model. Yes, it's directly related to what we do as designers. And of course we can go and pull accessories to put on an installation. Duh. That's the beauty of it. That's the reason that it's so great for us. But that aside, you still have to have employees to ring up customers as they come in. You still have to check the inventory. You have to open up the boxes, all the things. And so it's still its own working business. And I don't want that part to go by the wayside for people who are considering it. It's a lot of work. It's so much work.
It is very rewarding. And I'm sure, John, you had the same thing. I don't know what your store was called, but I'm assuming it was John McClane Designs or something like that.
It was Gilded Home.
The name of my store is Christopher Tights. So people come in all the time.
So narcissistic you are. Jesus.
I know, right? But they come in all the time and they will say, people work in the store, I don't know, let me ask Christopher. They're like, Christopher? You're Christopher? I'm like, yeah. It's so funny to me how people associate that, because my name's on there, that it's a bigger thing. I'm like, yes, I'm the one with the debt. I'm the one with the problems. I'm the one with the issues that has to handle everything. So it's just a funny misconception that people have on that. But again, it is very rewarding. It is, like you said, a great opportunity to have a source to pull from. We just did it last week on an install. It's like, oh, that box would be perfect right here. Run to the store, get that box. It's a great way to have things. And it cuts down on your shopping time and all that kind of stuff. And what you're putting in the house it's quality, and it's the right thing.
That's it. That's it. You know exactly what you're putting into a project is good stuff. The downside of that is that when you're not stocking for a project, when you're not sourcing for your own projects and putting things into your projects, you're dependent upon the people walking in to your store to buy things. And you're dependent upon traffic and the lovely public that we talk about who may not appreciate the fact that you spent hours and hours and hours trudging around market trying to find that perfect piece to put in your store. And then all they want is to know, like, when are you putting this on sale? When is this going to be cheaper than what you have it priced at, right? So that was the part for me that was hard. Have you found that the retail public side of things, just the walk-in traffic, is a different animal than you using the store for your own benefit for your design projects?
It's interesting to me that, so my first store, I opened it when I was 23. So 20 some odd years, 25 years, I've been in retail in some degree. And to see the shift and see how it's changed over the years has been unreal to me. What I notice now is, yes, you're exactly right. Everybody comes in, when is the sale starting? When, that's the mentality. And I feel like that has been that mentality has been driven by the internet. Everything is sign up now and get 20% off. Do this now and get 20% off, which who is fooled by that? They're just wanting, it's just to get your information. Just that's their thing. But it's really trickled down into our society. The other thing that really annoys me is when people will come in drinking their $7 cup of coffee and they come in and they're like, these candles are $40. I'm like, yeah, they are. Those are the cheap ones. And what really irritates me though is people that will come in and take the pictures so that they can then cross-reference and see where they can get that product cheaper. And for anybody who owns a business and owns a brick and mortar, the expenses that go along with that, it's just, you can't even comprehend. It's like every day you get something new. It's like, oh, great, I have to pay for this now. Or, oh, great, we have to do this now. Or, oh, the insurance is, there's the liability insurance and the workers' comp. And there's all these things that all tie up together. And it's such an expensive endeavor to do. And so to have the audacity to come in and say something is too expensive when I'm barely making any money on it to pay for this experience that you're getting to have. Excuse me? It's really something that I've said this before. I'd rather throw it in the trash than give it to you for on sale. Just because it is inconsiderate and rude to me. And I will say this, with every designer has gone to Home Goods. If you say you haven't, you're lying. We've all done it. We've all found things. They've got some great things sometimes. But Home Goods specializes in going to these manufacturers who have, I know a lot about this. A sample will be created in China or India or wherever. They'll create the sample. And then, yes, the sample will be, it'll be approved. And then the company, the factory in China will make 2,000 of these pieces. And then they're not quite right. They're not exactly how the customer wanted them. So the factory then will say, okay, we'll sell these to you for pennies on the dollar. Then that product then is what is the gleam in the eye to companies like Home Goods, because they buy these things. They might be slightly flawed. They might be discontinued fragrances or things like that. And that's what the store is stocked with. And I know we know a lot of this, John, but I'm just saying this for the general listener. So it's very concerning to me when somebody says, well, you can get this cheaper at Home Goods. You can, but it's not the same. It's never the same. And so, again, I love it. I use it. They've got some great things there, but they also make our business very difficult. It's hard to see a $28 pillow at Home Goods and then to justify a $228 pillow to a client. So it's made our industry much tougher. But just always know there is a difference in what you're getting. And so I don't know how I got on that soapbox, but I'll stand on it firmly.
No, I, and I will lift you up higher on it. I'm with you all the way. There's a difference. Just even back to your retail situation, like there was an artist who, even if it was bought from, let's just use a Global Views, for example. So there was an artist who designed that piece for Global Views. Global Views made that piece. Global Views sold that piece to you. You put that piece in your store. So that is a whole chain of events that had to happen to get to that retail setting, right? The fact that someone would come in and just suddenly want a discount on something that negates the person who designed it, negates the vendor who manufactured it, negates the designer who spent all the time at market finding the perfect piece that works so great in the setting of their retail store. That is the part that really pisses me off, is when we work so hard and everybody behind the scenes of that works so hard. But as you said, with the internet and when this sort of like instant gratification, grab and go society that we're in, they want it right now. They want it so fast that they don't really think about all the beauty, all the art that goes into those things. And choosing, by the way, for everybody who is not a designer listening, choosing a piece that is beautiful and that is quality and that is timeless and that is elegant and that is sophisticated is an art of itself. Like when someone chooses a piece that you fall in love with at a retail store, that is because someone with a good eye and good talent chose that piece. And so that is my soapbox around that whole thing, is because that is the part that you don't get credit for. When somebody says, oh, can I just get this cheaper? That annoys me, because you are not getting credit for choosing a beautiful piece that they fell in love with.
Right. And I think one more thing to add to that is, you mentioned market. I know that you're a market junkie like me. I love going to market. Yeah. And it's great. And we have great fun. And we see all of our friends in the industry. So that's all good and fine. However, you spend about $10,000 to get to a market. By the time you buy food and the value plane ticket and you buy a hotel or you get a hotel, it's so much money. And although it's fun to see people, the goal or the main reason we're there is product searching for our clients. And all of that has to be paid for some way. I don't just come home from market and there's $10,000 of cash sitting there. Like, great. We have to factor that into things. So yeah, the sale culture, I'm sure it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. But my way around that, to jump to a different topic on that, the only way around the Wayfair world that we live in, or the Amazon world, is to offer, it can't be a product, but offer a service that can't be provided. And that's absolutely what we do in our business. And you, I know that you are very good, John, with all of your coaching and critiquing and how to maximize the dollar. And so we may differ on these things because we do a lot of things above and beyond. I'm not saying we differ on that, but you know, to get things right with a client, we have to make multiple trips or things. Those are the kind of service things that I like to provide, because I know that if you order that on Amazon and it comes in and you don't like it, that's too bad. But we can do that and we can really take care of the customer. And so those are the things that I think anyone moving forward in the industry, they're going to have to provide those kind of services. And it may be being from the South and having Southern hospitality, we still do gift wrap at our store, like the old school days. So I loved every year at Christmas, you'd look under the tree and know where everything came from, because every store had gift wrap and you knew what their wrap was. So we still offer that in our store. It's like, you want us to wrap that up? And people are like, it's like their jaw drops. It's like, what? You'll wrap this? Absolutely. A big, beautiful bow, which is something that in a city like Las Vegas, that's unheard of. So I try to find things that you can't get anyplace else. And that kind of sets us apart. And those are our sale tactics for being above and beyond the Wayfair world.
No, I'm all about that. And I'm all about a luxury experience. To me, that person has to pay for a luxury experience to get that luxury experience. And the part that annoys me is when, you know, those discount people want that luxury experience for the discounted price, or when a design client wants the experience that I'm going to give my luxury client who is spending the amount of money to pay for our time to cover those mistakes that we make and to take all the time to return those things. That's fine, as long as they're paying the cost of a luxury service versus someone who's not paying the cost, who wants that discounted rate, who wants that $99 online design consultation that they're getting for whatever services that they're buying and putting in their cart online. That's not what we provide as as true luxury designers, that's not the service level that we're providing. But I agree with you with all that. People pay for a service. They get it. That's what they get when they pay for that. It's all about you get what you pay for. I agree with that. Speaking of getting what you pay for, I just happen to have something beside me here that I light every morning. And for those listening and not seeing this on YouTube, I light my Vanessa Williams candle. And I'm not even joking. This, you thought I'm joking with this, but every day I actually have two, depending upon which mood I'm in. I have a Vanessa Williams candle that I light. This one's called Last Midnight. I don't know why that was fitting to light with you today on this podcast episode, but hey. But this candle is something that you created along with Vanessa Williams. And you talked about providing a service that you can't find everywhere and something that is unique. This is unique. This is the only place they can find this is with Vanessa Williams or with you. But you're really good at crafting things that people can't, not just products, by the way, but other services, which we're going to talk about. But tell me how this line came about with Vanessa Williams, what it's about, what's going to happen. There's lots of things happening with it. She was at your store recently here in Las Vegas, which was a fabulous event that you hosted. But I love the candle line. It's fantastic. But tell me all about it and all the good stuff that you have going on with that, because it's really exciting.
Well, Vanessa and I became friends a few years ago. And I had a private label candle line that I had developed for my store. And maybe three years ago, she loved one of my fragrances. She loved it. She said, this is my favorite candle. I would send it to her all the time. And I said, we should really look into doing a line of candles for you. And she has a lot of things in the works coming up. And so I was thinking of it being more or less something that can be used as a giveaway or for some type of promotion or things like that. So I thought it would work out well for that. And so the timing was really great. And so we collaborated together on those and picked out fragrances, picked out colors. And there's five different candles that we have currently. We're adding to that. There are five that we have currently, and those are all different songs from her career. And I actually picked out the different song titles that I wanted to use that she approved them. But I tried to find things from different genres. And so like Everlasting Love is from the album Everlasting Love. That's probably our most popular candle. Last Midnight was actually from Broadway show Into the Woods that she did. So there's lots of different, I tried to get across the board with from her Broadway to her early albums to her more jazzy albums to give your everyone is their favorite. So that's how that idea came about.
Well, my favorite is Starbright, actually. I love it. It's so clean, and I'm sipping it right now. It's so clean and fresh. I love that one so much. So you're working on some new stuff with her. I know she's, when we're recording this, I don't know when you guys are listening, but she's working on her Devil Wears Prada show, right? Are you, anything related to that? I'm just curious.
We talked about it. We're going to do, like I said, she has new music coming out. The first single is going to be released in just a few weeks. It's called Legs. It's really fun dance song. It's great. And with the new music, we're looking at doing something that kind of works with the new music that's coming out. And we don't have, it's very early stages of doing it. But, yeah. But the candles that you have there, that's called the Signature Collection. We've also got a set of the tens, and we call that the Lyric Collection. And they say things like, sometimes the sun goes round the moon. Just little clips of some of her more famous songs. And so this new one, we don't really have a name for it, but it's going to be a little bit small. It's going to be in between the 10 and the large to give everybody a different price points across the board. And so kind of something for everybody is what I'm hoping for. But nothing for Devil Wears Prada just yet. But we did talk about that when we met the other day. We actually went to the candle manufacturing company up in Philadelphia, or right inside Philadelphia, and toured the factory. She made some of the candles. We marked all those so that we could send people candles that she actually poured herself. So it was really fun to do that. But we talked about doing candles for that. So she gets to make the call on the candles that we do, that we sell, but those would go through all different chains of people and things like that to get all the improvements. So I don't know if I have the energy for that or not. But to answer your question, yeah, right now the only place to buy those is in my store or online on our website. But she's building a new website for herself, and they're really gonna, we're gonna transition them over to her website. So people, it's a little confusing now. It's like, not to throw out an advertisement here, but it's shopchristophertodd.com/Vanessa-Williams. And by the time you do all that, it's like, you can't remember all that. So we're gonna do it where we can streamline it easier for her fans, that they can do it directly through.
Well, and I'll put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to go and grab that as well, to where they can find the candles. But they are great. And the event was wonderful. All your story. She's a delight. She's such a sweet, sweet person, and just a great, great collaboration that you guys.
She is, sorry for talking over you there, but she's one of the kindest people. Vanessa is to me like Dolly is to you. And I fell in love with her years ago. And I was always a fan of her music. So to be able to not only meet her, but to become her friend, it's really a life-changing opportunity. And when I discovered after we'd gotten to know each other, is that, again, obviously I love my parents because I'm going to reflect back to them now again. But I realized that she and I had very similar upbringings. And which, to think of a white man from Arkansas and a black woman from New York, but we both had parents, not only educated parents, but educators. Both our parents, her mom and dad, were both music teachers. My dad was a high school principal, and my mother was a music professional. We had the music thing in common. We had, and all these things. But I think the most standout thing for me with our upbringing and our similarities is the fact that we both had parents that pushed us and believed in us and said, you do what makes you happy, and you learn from your mistakes. And she and I both made mistakes, and we had to learn from them. But we had the support of our parents, but we didn't have the negativity of, oh, you better not do that, or, oh, we had people pushing us. And to have that in your background, it's so important. And so I feel like that's why we're structured the way we are. And I'll tell you, I was just in her house 2 weeks ago. She actually took me to the airport. I was flying out of Westchester County Airport, which is very close to her house. And I had to lay over in Chicago, and I'm at a restaurant eating, and one of her songs comes on. And I still get, you know, the thought, I can't believe she just dropped me off at the airport. But it's still a very strange thing. But I'm thrilled with everything that she and I are working on together, and have had the opportunity to do together. And you're going to love her new music that's coming out. And so, again, not trying to be an advertisement for her, but she's a very special person. And I hope that people will pick up a candle or two or 12 and enjoy. I'll make sure you get a fresh
one. Definitely. I can't wait. Well, and what a full circle moment for that little boy from Arkansas, too. Now, I want to pivot a minute before we run out of time today. You do something else in your business. You have so many different arms of your business that I think are so fun and interesting, but you actually love events, and you love event planning, and you do so well at event planning, and you do some really big events, and you did one big event years ago that was a pretty big event that I think everybody will know about. Tell everybody about that event, and tell me about what that meant to you, and also what has happened since then, and how this is a different area of your business, and what revenue streams. So tell me about this event planning side of your business, and what that means to you, especially starting with years ago, how you started out.
Well, that kind of goes back, John, to how we started this whole conversation about how just my entrepreneurial spirit of how I do things. And I made out a list of things that I want, my goals. And I did that, I think it was like 18 days before my 21st birthday. And I had 10 goals. And on those goals, one of them actually was to meet Vanessa Williams. But one of the other ones was to do the flowers at the Academy Awards. I have no idea why. Honestly, I didn't even know. I didn't even know that they had to, I don't even know where that even came from. But I made it my goal. By golly, I was going to do it. And so I was living in Arkansas at the time, and I just decided to get in my car and drive to LA and see what I could figure out. Because I knew that no one would really, you know, this was before the internet. This was in 2003. Well, I mean, it wasn't before the internet, but it was before you could pull it up on your phone and just do things. It was before it was.
Yeah.
I got in my car and I drove to LA, and I called the Academy of Motion Pictures. I had to call it 1411 information to get the Academy of Motion Pictures. And I was like, who does the flowers for the Academy Awards? And she was like, excuse me? And long story short, she figured out what I was talking about. And she said, a company that's called Charisma Floats does that. Okay, I don't know what that means. So I found, I don't even remember how I found the information for Charisma Plugs, but I found Charisma Plugs. And I remember I went to an internet cafe in Azusa, California, and went in there and looked up the information for Charisma Plugs. And I called them and I said, hey, here's who I am. And I do flowers and I would love to talk to you about doing the Academy Awards. And the guy was like, well, we don't really do that. We have a team that does that. So thanks, but no thanks. And I'm like, okay. I said, I have driven through the entire country to get here and to have this conversation with you. Would you please at least give me 5 minutes just to look at my portfolio and see what I can do? And so he agreed to meet with me. His name is Larry Crane. Let me say this piece of information. Charisma Floats means they built rose gold parade floats. And so so that's why they were in Pasadena, Azusa, and some area. And so he said, if you will come out and work with us doing the rose parade, we will talk about it at that point. And I said, sure. On Christmas Day of 2003, I flew out to Pasadena and started doing rose gold parade floats. And they loved me, they loved my work, and he allowed me to come in and be a part of the Oscars team that year. And while I was there, he said to me, he said, you really need to meet this woman that lives in Las Vegas. She does all the events for the MGM Mirage company, is what it was called at the time. Now it's called MGM Resorts. And that doesn't mean MGM Breeding. It's MGM, Bellagio, Mirage, Treasure Island, used to be Midland, all of them. So I was like, okay. So I got in a car and we drove to Las Vegas and I was like, I need to meet Cheryl. And I kind of did the same thing with her. And Cheryl liked me. And she was like, I'd love for you to see one of our events. I told her, I was like, I don't have time to really stay here. And to be quite honest with you, I don't have the money to stay here and get hotel rooms. I just can't do that. I need to go home. And she said, if you would like to stay, I'll get a room for you and put you up. And so you can see the events are that we do here. I said, okay, sure. And so the next day, I go, and it was at the Mirage, and they were doing this big elaborate event. And I am not joking, John. So this, I go in, and doing a sound check is Garth Brooks. And Trisha Yearwood is also there. She's standing there, and I'm from Monticello, Arkansas. She's from Monticello, Georgia. We're having this conversation, and I'm obviously like, What is going on in my life right now? What is happening to me right now? It was the most unbelievable thing. And it, all this just started happening. And so that's why I moved to Las Vegas. And I moved here and I started working with MGM Mirage Event. And the rest is history. That's what brought me here. To not be too boring and go too long here, over the years, we evolved into more things. And I was able to get into the automotive industry. And so that's really our big clients now. We do car shows. We do hospitality events for car shows. We actually leave next week for 3 weeks to go to Kentucky to do an equestrian event for Land Rover. Land Rover is probably our biggest client that we work with, but we also work with Audi, Volkswagen. We've done Rolls-Royce events just across the board with the automotive industry. It's one of those things, again, word of mouth, doing what you say, big, honest, integrity, it's really built our business. And so that's gotten to that point. And it's a big part of our business. It's a lucrative part of our business. And the thing I love about the design business is that it is, with interior and residential homes, a project can go on and on and on and on, and you're never done. And with an event, this is the day of the event. It has to be done this day. If the table comes in broken, well, honey, you fix it, you figure it out, and you make it happen, because they're not going to stop the event because your table came in broken. So it is really, it keeps me on my feet. It keeps me smart. It keeps me, it's a way to really keep me, I don't want to say motivated, but it keeps me just on my toes. It's made me better at my job. It's made me say, okay, this is what we have to do, and we have to figure it out right now. I love that pressure. It is so fun to me. Yeah. Makes me so happy. And then the event's over, it's done, you pack it up, and you don't think about it again. And then they pay you. Whereas residential, it just trickles on. Just people have time to say, well, I don't really like the hem in that drink there or whatever. It's like, in an event, you can duct tape that baby up and not think twice about it. So it's really a fun, interesting world. And I love that I'm a part of it. And the other part about all the different parts of our businesses that we do is with residential design and doing floral design and doing event design and doing holiday design, that gives us the opportunity to go into homes over and over again. And it's another way to really spread the word about, because when you can, we're actually going to do a big event for one of our clients in a couple of weeks. We go in, she's planning a party. It's just a dinner for 14 people, but we're going in, I'm not picking the food, but I'm orchestrating the menu. I'm doing all that. I'm doing the wine pairing. I'm doing all of this. I'm setting up the house. I'm making the flowers for the tables. I'm doing everything. So when they come in, they say, oh my gosh, who did all this? Oh, Christopher does it all. And then I'm at the event. Then they get to meet me. It's the most beautiful plan that came out of, it's a godsend. Honestly, it's just, I don't know how I put it together, but it just works so beautifully for me. And the same thing with holiday design. When do people have the most parties in their home? During the holidays. So we set up these elaborate homes with this wonderful holiday design, and people with money attract people with money. And they're like, oh my God, who did this for me? Oh, it's a guy in Las Vegas. We fly in. Well, they want to keep up with the Joneses. Well, they got to hate me next year. So it's really turned into a beautiful thing. So that's how it all goes together. And we make it all work, because truly all of the things are in a way linked together in some form or fashion.
And you do throw a great party, and you do make a mean charcuterie board. Like, it's just like so good. So I can see why people would love
that. That's the beauty of being, having a store next to Trader Joe's. It has really come in handy.
You know, too, I think, you know, it's brilliant marketing, because you're actually getting paid to market. And also, too, something that popped into my head is, when are people more happy than at a party or at an event that they're having cocktails and they're having food and they're having great conversation? And then suddenly they're like, oh my God, I want to have this same experience in my own house, at my own event, at my own party, at my own Christmas soiree. Who can I call? Oh, here's the person to do that. It's absolutely brilliant to take one talent that you're so, so good at and then parlay that into something else. I think more people should consider avenues and ways of just basically taking what we're, and not only are you good at it, but you love doing it, and it's a passion for you, and it's almost this zone of genius where you get into it and you just love doing it so much, and that comes across with that. But the fact that you can take that and then turn it into another revenue stream and get more business from that you're, again, getting paid to do, is just brilliant to me. Just so brilliant. And the fact, by the way, that this came across, you say it just happened, whatever, automatically. No, this came across and happened because you decided to get in your little car and drive from Arkansas to Los Angeles years ago and start this whole thing. And that's what I don't want to be swept under the rug here. I don't want people to forget the fact that this came about because you took this risk. Yes, it was a calculated risk, but you took this risk. And in this society, again, where people just want to go online and grab something and click something and post a post and expect miracles to happen, you literally were boots on the ground doing the hard work, putting in the hard effort, doing things that were probably a little uncomfortable for you, but look what came out of it. One thing led to the other, and it literally changed your entire life. So I want people to take that away from this, is you say it so casually, but it was a big, bold move. And I wish more people would take big, bold moves in their lives and do things that are outside of their comfort zone, because it paid off in spades for you, for God's sake.
One saying that I've always loved is, it is not pretentious if it is earned. And that is so true with what you were saying. People, they want, but they're not willing to earn it. They just want it. And then when they don't have it, but they want to act like they have it, and they live in this pretend world of, oh, honey, it's wonderful, all that. It's just, I think that they beat themselves up, because everybody can see through that. If you think for one second that people are not seeing through that, I'm talking to your listeners.
Oh, yeah. No,
if you think that people aren't seeing through this shenanigan that you're putting on, you're so wrong, because they do. But when you've earned it, I think that may go back to why I don't have to I don't have to do any of that. It's like, yeah, I've got the story to back it up, honey. I got out there and went to an internet cafe. You know what that is? Never even heard of that, have you? I'm old. But yeah, I do appreciate you saying that. It was instrumental in doing what I do. And one other thing I'd like to add to one thing you were saying is I'm very blessed and I didn't have those talents. I can't do flowers. I can't do these things. And some people may not have the abilities to do, and that's fine if you don't. But there's no reason you should not have those people in your circle. I have one of my very dearest friends, and I think you've met him, John, Daniel Keeley, who he lives in Arkansas, but he's an extraordinary exterior designer. He's not a landscape person. He's an exterior designer. He does exterior spaces. I have him in my back pocket with my projects because I'm like, we do the inside, but let me tell you who can do your outside. So it goes to the same thing. If you are a designer and you don't do events or you don't do flowers or something, have a rapport with people that do so that you can go in and be that concierge service for your client and say, let me take care of all this for you. I know a great party planner. I know a great florist. I know a great printer. I know a great lawn guy. I mean, have everybody in your, I want to say Rolodex because I'm old.
I want to say Rolodex too.
Let's get our walking cane out and look through our Rolodex. But have those contacts available for these people.
Yeah.
And thank you. And you can, that's another revenue building thing. You know, you don't plan the whole thing for free. Orchestrate all that and send them a bill for it. It's not a huge bill, but it's something that otherwise they would be doing all the work and farming down to other people. And then you build not only a rapport with your client, you build a rapport with these people. And it's just, they're then going to return the favor and send people to you.
That's great advice. Great advice. And you can take that even further. And even if you don't have all the design skills, even on your team, if you're like, I'm terrible at CAD. I say this all the time and I hate it. And I don't ever want to be good at it because once I start doing it, then I'll have to do it. So I don't ever want to do it. So I have people that I pay to do that on my team. And I know you do too, right? So to me, if you're not good at something on your, and you want to do that as a design firm, even bring people in, and it doesn't have to be an employee. It could be a 1099 or whatever, but you can bring somebody in to make you look better and to offer better services too under your bigger umbrella. You can still provide services to people that aren't your forte. So if you're not good at something that's you would want to offer, bring somebody in and provide that service through somebody else on your team that may not, doesn't always have to be you is my point. You don't have to do it.
You know, John, we have a slogan for my business is I say functional design for quality living because I like to create functional livable spaces. And so that kind of goes hand in hand with that. If you are helping somebody live their best life, even if it's with a party or whatever, I just feel like that's important to build this relationship with your client. And I don't know, the best thing I think is to be able to really give your client, I don't want to say give, but if you can concentrate on providing all these services to your client and taking over so much of the responsibility of things that they have that would get under that umbrella that you're talking about. I just think it's so smart and so appreciative from your clients that they have that person in their corner.
I agree. And you do a marvelous, marvelous job of that. So, I mean, my gosh, you've been in business 30 years and you started when you were 10, I guess, right? Nine years old, something like that. Seven.
Just turned 49. And so, yeah, I think that's funny too, John, because not too long, I guess it was last High Point. And I know that you do a lot of panels and I do a lot of panels as well. And I was thinking, it's like, why would anyone want to come and listen to me and hear what I have to say? That was mind-boggling to me that somebody would take their time. I'm busy when I go to High Point. I don't really have time to really sit for an hour and do that. Or I made myself believe that. And then I guess it dawned on me that I've been doing this a really long time. And I guess what made me think of that is my dad had the same job. My dad was a high school principal for 34 years. And when I tell people that he worked as a high school principal for 34 years, people are like, oh my gosh, they have the same job for 34 years. And I'm right there at that and not even 50 yet. So it's like, yeah, I guess, and I know you can say the same because you're old too. We can, but you know, it's like, oh yeah, we have been around the block. We have experienced that. We have had ups and downs. We can tell people what they can do, because generally on these things. It's people that are starting out, or they may be young and starting, or they may be older and starting out. I don't know, but it's just it's something that we've earned. And I had to really, it was just last year that I realized that I've really earned this. I've really done the work to earn the title of being a panelist. I know you've done panels on your own. Well, you don't get to be a panel if you're doing it on your own, but you've done talks by yourself for quite some time. This is going to be my first one.
You're not a sugarcoater whatsoever. And I think you should, by the way, stop and pat yourself on the back. And I've probably been way too kind to you in this episode because I give you a hard time all the time in life. So I've been way too nice to you. I'm going to edit this thing out to where it does not come across as nice as I've been to you. But no, I think you're great. I love you. And I think that you've just done a fabulous job with your company. And I just admire you in so many ways. But if you were to go back, you talked about accomplishments and all the things. And I asked everybody this, if you were to go back to little Christopher coming to Las Vegas and starting to do these events and then deciding to do design, would you change anything, or would you give him one piece of advice, one thing that you would say, oh, by the way, here's something I would tell you to know or to look out for or to be cautious of or to know, just some kind of words of advice that you would give yourself as that 20-something year old starting out, moving into this whole world of design and events and all the things that you've
done. Yeah, my biggest piece of advice that I think is good advice for everyone, it's like a three-part advice. You do not know everything. You are not the best in what you do. And there's always someone smarter than you that can help you. That's the advice I would give myself, because moving here, I had just picked up and moved from Arkansas, and I know everything about everything. And don't try to tell me how to do this, because I am Christopher Thomas. And I'm joking when I say that, I've never really had the attitude. I stepped away from education probably more than I should have. And I don't mean a true education, but just day-to-day life. If I'd been willing to listen instead of being the know-it-all, I think that I would have gained a lot more information if I'd been open to listening to that. And I also think the same thing about, everybody's going to say, hey, I'm just a little whatever, but I think that really knowing that there is so much talent out there. I used to think that I was so good at Christmas trees. Like, there's no one better. I'm so good at this. And I do have a very specific technique. I'm very good at what I do with it. It's very fun. To branch off, I always think it's funny when people are like, we're interior designers, we do not do Christmas. And I know some people love it, some people hate it, but I do Christmas in a big way. I love it, and I'll always do it. Don't you worry. But I think that's really important advice, to really find people that are better than you. Because when you can find people that are better than you, they will help you be a better person. And they're not trying, if they're any better than you, they're not trying to compete with you. They're more than willing to help. It's the people, the opposite of that, who feel intimidated or feel challenged by somebody. That's my opinion. But that's what I would tell myself going back. I would say, well, that could really help me, and they would probably teach me some things if I would be willing to listen.
I love that. I love that. It's basically, you have two ears and one mouth for a purpose, right? Listen twice the amount of time that you speak. So I think that's great. Good advice from a seasoned old veteran here. That's right, Grandpa. No, Christopher, this has been fantastic. Tell everybody where they can find you. I know you don't hang a lot on social media, but you are there sometimes, and when people force you to be. So tell everybody on social media where you are, and then of course your website, and then we'll put links to all of this in the show.
Sure. My Instagram is CTDesignLV. That's Christopher Tong Design Las Vegas, for those that are not following along there. CTDesignLV, that's my Instagram handle. I am not a big coaster. I don't have anybody that helps me do it. So that's only when fun things happen as I actually, when I post. My store, which we didn't really talk about this, my store is in Henderson, Nevada. It's on Sunset and Green Valley Parkway. But actually, we are going to be closing our retail store here in a few weeks and moving just to an office. And our new store location is going to be opening up in Nashville, actually in Brentwood, Tennessee, in a few months. So that is stuff that I will be sharing on Instagram. So I will be a little more active with that. So that's new developments. Not many people know about it yet, but we are making that transition into doing that. I'm very excited about it. And so there'll be more to that to come in the future.
Breaking news. You heard it here first. The new Christopher Todd store in Brentwood in Nashville area. So exciting. So lots of exciting things. There's all, and you do post on your stories. You're pretty good about keeping the stories up to date. So I do like to follow the stories. You always like pop up. I'm like, wait, where is he right now? He's somewhere. Like, oh my God, he's there. Like he was just here yesterday. Like you're always somewhere interesting. So yeah. And then I'll see you when we're recording this. I'll see you at High Point in about a week. So at the date of this recording. So there you go. Christopher, thank you so much. I'll see you soon.
It's great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for sticking with me to the end of the Designer Within podcast. It means the world to me. If you're ready to dive deeper into the topics that we've discussed here, be sure to check out my online coaching and courses program, DesignSuccessAcademy.com. Here, I will teach you everything you need to know to run your interior design business from starting the project all the way to the end, including marketing and pricing your services for profit. And for more information on this podcast, including how to be a guest or my design services in general, go to johnmclain.co. That's johnmclain.co. See you soon, friend.